Hello and welcome to another episode of the Mumbrella Podcast. I'm Colin Delaney. This week, I chatted with Bevan Lee, creator of Packed to the Rafters and the forthcoming A Place to Call Home, and Glenn Mazzara, showrunner of AMC's The Walking Dead. We spoke about, among other things, the role of the showrunner and the adaptation process.
Welcome to another Google Hangout for Mumbrella. Today, we are speaking with Bevan Lee, creator of Packed to the Rafters and the upcoming A Place to Call Home for Seven, and Mr. Glenn Mazzara, showrunner for The Walking Dead. I'm Colin Delaney. Thanks for joining us. Let's start maybe, Glenn, the term showrunner is not particularly familiar for us in Australia. We've heard it used before. Would you mind just sort of running us through what that entails as a role?
Well, the showrunner is the person who is paid by the studio to, you know, very simply run the show. You're responsible for all the scripts. You work with a team of writers, so you have a lot of, you're making the creative choices. Obviously, you have to pitch that to your partners, to the studio, and get everybody to buy into the vision of the show. But the showrunner is the one who's setting the tone, the vision, who's saying, it's okay, we're gonna write that story. You're also responsible for the budgets, the production, all of that. So you have both the artistic hat to wear and the producing hat. And so it's interesting because as a showrunner, as a writer, the things that make you a successful writer may not make you a successful showrunner because a lot of people have never dealt with budgets or schedules before. So it's a tricky job, but it's great. I love it. And it's really very, very tricky.
Okay, cool. And I'll also just remind you that if you want to ask Glenn or Bevan a question, the hashtag is #showrunning, and we have Kathy McGinn sitting in monitoring social media. Now, Bevan, your title, if I was to go to IMDb, your title is Network Script Executive. And we had the chat with Glenn lined up, and you contributed an interesting column. You're a regular contributor to Encore. Yeah. This week you brought an interesting sort of column to us. Perhaps first describe the difference, if there is any, between what you do and what a showrunner does.
There is a difference. I think it grew up in our business because we began the industry making a lot more hours per year with our shows than we have currently ended up having. We started out doing about, on some shows, 98 hours a year, and then we went down to 44 hours a year. Then the 22-hour season model came in, and my latest show is 13 hours. Now, I think the way our business split the job to make the job doable with the number of hours we were doing per season was the creative writing aspect went to one person, they called them the script producer, and then the other factor went to the other person, which we called the producer. And I think that we are now in a position with the number of hours per year for one person to do the job without going insane, given the number of hours that normally turned out before they would have. And I think we will move into the more like the American showrunner model. My article came out of the fact that I felt a number of people had seen the term from America and had formed the opinion by not doing their due diligence that it was simply a carte blanche to somebody to come and be an auteur as a writer and not necessarily have the, I thought they'd got wrong-headed notions about it, you know. So we've always had the showrunner, but I suppose up until now it's tended to be split into two people. And I always said previously a show is only as healthy as the relationship between its producer and script producer. I think certainly when we find the right people, that will merge into one, but it's part of the journey that our industry has gone. I choose not to because I'd be terrible. I'm a script guy. Sure. So I always rely on having a fantastic producer, but I know there's people out there who do the job very well.
Yeah, sure. Glenn, you're out here for the TV writing studio, mainly. Someone else who's on board from that is the Australian producer-writer, Tony Ayres, who I believe he adopted the title showrunner for The Slap, which is a series that ran in 2011, I believe. Mm-hmm. Bevan, do you see it being a title that's going to be brought into Australian TV producing?
Well, if it is, great. I just think it has to be earned. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, the person who has to come into it, Tony, obviously had the credentials to be a good showrunner. And it was a 6-hour series, I think. So it was interesting, the title showrunner applied, I suppose, to what is basically a mini-series, and that voice in showrunner really is being the title you apply to an ongoing series in my head. But, you know, what's in a title, it's what's done, and as long as the duties are done properly. My main argument in the article was simply to let people know that there is due preparation necessary to take the title. It's not just a title that's bestowed upon a writer and therefore giving them freedom.
No, that's true. I mean, you do have people who can create a show, okay? And not every showrunner is the creator of that show, okay? I've been a showrunner 3 times. I was the creator once. And on Walking Dead, I was not the creator. Frank Darabont was the creator of the show. And if you have a young creator who maybe doesn't have a lot of producing experience, you'll bring in, say, a showrunner over that person, or they'll be partners. You know, Damon Lindelof and Carlton Cuse on Lost partnered up when Damon was learning how to run that show. He needed some assistance, and Carlton's a guy who gave me my break, and he had a tremendous amount of experience. So you bring in a journeyman producer. So there's a lot of different models for show running, but it is, you know, it's kind of funny if you look at you know, the Martin Scorsese movie Hugo, right? Okay, so whatever you think about that movie, there's the scenes where you have the Georges Méliès is the guy who's, you know, like, come on girls, let's go, and they're trying to keep everything going, and he's writing and he's doing costumes and it's all of that, and not, it's certainly the showrunner collaborates with many different people, but at some point you're sort of the person saying, come on, let's put on a show, and you're saying we're going in that direction, and you need to become the vision. I think what's happened is you know, you have people who have a very distinctive voice, particularly on cable in the U.S., people like David Milch, Kurt Sutter, Matt Weiner, Vince Gilligan, and these people have these names have become popular to the audience because they want to know who makes these shows that we love so much. And so between that and social media and all of that, I mean, you know, if it wasn't for access to the internet and Twitter, nobody would know who I was, but people are interested in The Walking Dead, and so therefore they want to know everything they can about it.
Mm-hmm. Going back to what Bevan said, you know, our series used to be much longer, mm-hmm. And I imagine that was sort of the case in the US as well until the HBO model, as they've called it, started mm-hmm. rolling around, and series got a bit more shorter, but they got more expansive. Do you think it's a role that you could do for, you know, however, you know, over the 40 weeks of a rating season or something? Or is it
not
because you're saying you give so much?
Well,
and you're covering so much.
It depends on what type of showrunner you are. I tend to polish and rewrite a lot of the scripts. Okay, I feel, you know, when I was on Crash, for example, I wrote the Crash went directly to series for 13 episodes, so there was no pilot process. So I wrote the first episode, and then the second episode was written by 2 very talented writers. And when I released it into production, the network, the studio, the actors, the production, everybody just felt that was a different show because I hadn't polished it. You know what I mean? So I realized part of being a showrunner is to provide the vision, is to be the voice of the show. So I've always been able to work with very talented writers, but sometimes I just feel like, you know, I'll do a polish just so that I could say, yes, this is what we want to shoot. I don't know if I could polish 40 scripts or something like that. You couldn't be as hands-on. You would just have too many things doing. I could see how you would then want to split the thing. And there's a role that is gaining ground in the U.S. of the director-producer. so that the showrunner can focus on scripts. And it sounds like it might, on some shows, it might split into the model you described.
Yeah. My producer on Play School Home was formerly a director, has mm-hmm. directorial skills. And for me, I think that polish on any show is essential to get the integrated feel, the tonal nature of the piece mm-hmm. smooth. Mm-hmm. So on all of my shows, I mean, Play School Home, you know, I did huge amounts of work past the writers on most every script. Not because I was, I suppose I'm a control freak, but just because I knew exactly what I wanted it to be. Mm-hmm. They had no idea. I had to get it there, so that's fine. But then, on 88 or 44 or whatever, it really isn't possible. And for me, that polishing is very, very essential. I think we're in a position now, because we're coming down to smaller numbers, that people will start coming through who either are the writer, producer combo, or the director producer combo. Mm-hmm. Time will bring them out a little bit.
Yeah, excellent. Cool. Well, maybe this is a great time. Let's see if there is a question from Twittersphere. Kathy, have you got
something for us? Paul would like to know, who is more difficult to deal with, actors or directors?
Who is more difficult to deal with, actors or directors?
Well, I'll take that one. I would say that actors, you have to be more sensitive with actors. I won't say actors are difficult, because I love working with actors. But, they're handling very challenging material. They're going out there in front of the cameras, and they have questions. Because all of the actors I've worked with care, and they want to get it right. And sometimes there could be an impatience with certain writers or directors or producers. Why is this person asking a question? They should just go and say the lines. It's not that easy, I've never acted, but I've worked with actors, and so I know that they put so much of themselves into that, and they just really want to do well. And sometimes somebody has a process that they have questions. Directors, I've had a great time working with directors, and my process with that is, the director gets to have a lot of say into how they want to shoot things. I'll make adjustments in the script. If I agree with them, I'll help them tone the script. And then when they go to shoot, I'll put people around them, a writer on set, producer, so they could ask questions. But nobody stands over a director's shoulder on one of my shows. They are free to shoot what they want and call if they have questions. But for the most part, I turn the set over to the director. I really respect the directors and love what they do. So I don't know if anyone's really difficult. I've got some good stories from actors. I don't really have any good stories from directors, though. So
I think the difference for me is actors keep me true and I keep directors true, in the sense that they have character continuity. That is their character. We write it, but ultimately it becomes this symbiotic relationship that they take over. And they're the ones. I remember one of the fabulous actresses in a Place to Call Home came to me. She said, "I know what you want from this scene. I can play it, but I don't believe it." Mm-hmm. And she was an all-pro, and she would have played it to the hilt, and she would have made it work. But
Noni
keeps up to the mark. She knows a thing or two, and she keeps up to the mark. And I appreciate it. We worked on the scene, and it was better. And she would have played it for me. The audience would have loved the moment, but it wouldn't have been a true moment. Whereas directors, because they come in on rotation, sometimes they will want to, because they have their own artistic ego, they want to slightly hijack the show to their artistic ego, and you have to slightly corral them back in to say, no, this is a show, and it would be lovely to have that, but it's going to stand out a little bit as a sort of a different show. So that's what, none of it's bad. I mean, on the latest show, I had a wonderful relationship with all the actors and the directors, but that was a different tension for me. Mm.
But you also have control over the directors in a way that you could cut something, you can make different choices, you could probably work around stuff. With the actors, if you get a certain performance, that's what you're gonna get. You may not have those options in the editing room. So I do agree with what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we'll go another question to Kathy. Kathy?
There's lots of questions coming in actually from angry fans who want to know what's going on with The Walking Dead. What's the plan for season 4, and why do you keep killing off the good characters?
Ooh, why do you keep killing off the good characters, and what's the plan for season 4?
Well,
perhaps this is where we can, without shooting down that question too much, You're not on season four, however, is that correct?
That's correct.
Right, so what happened there? You did the first three seasons.
I was a freelancer who wrote a script for the first season. Right. That's all I did. I didn't produce that show. And then Frank Darabont asked me to join him and be his number two writer, producer for the second season. So then Frank left the show and I was elevated to showrunner. And then I made certain decisions about the show and have been very lucky that people have responded to that, although I would love to answer this question. So then this season, we've told the story that I've wanted to tell. And then as we were putting together stories and tone and talking about the shape of the show to come, it became clear that AMC, who produces the show, and I, we were on two different pages. We just were. So we just thought, okay, this was not a show that I had created. This is based on pre-existing material and stuff. So we just thought it was good to just part while it was a good time to part amicably and stuff. So that was the story there. There's real no scandal or anything. It was just time to go. And then as far as killing off the good characters, people tweet me all the time, get rid of this character, get rid of this character. And then you do it. And then suddenly people are upset. So, I've always said nobody is safe on this show. I keep my word on that. And that's why people watch it. It's I think what happens is unexpected and, you get what you show up for.
And if you don't, as a viewer, it does keep the tension in there, because if you knew that the good characters, the popular characters are always safe, then come the zombie chase sequence, you actually sit back because they're not going to die. So for me, that keeps the tension as a viewer alive rather than being negative to me, it's positive.
Well, it's one of those things that when you are sitting here, when you watch this show or any show, we're able to take ourselves out of the process and say it's a TV show. They're not going to really kill that person. They need him for next week or something like that. Fortunately, we've got something going on the show with zombies running around, and we embrace that creatively, that we challenge that every week. That's not people have been watching TV for decades and they have that expectation, and we've subverted that expectation. So I think it's made the show fun.
Cool. All right, well, if you've got a question, hashtag show running is what we went with. Because the walking away, a combination of the two series or Pack to the Dead, just didn't really work for us. So hashtag show running. Let's go back to Kathy. Kathy, have you got something for us?
How does an emerging scriptwriter get an idea turned into a TV series? And that is from Kate.
You pitch your idea around. For the emerging TV writer, quite frankly, when I started, this probably sound like somebody on the RSL stool, but when I started, there was very much a feeling that you went into house. You didn't think up front of getting your TV series created. That was not in your notion. Your notion was to get a job on the show. And then you felt that you had to train, and then as you improved your skills, you'd start to get ideas, and you'd sort of know in your humble soul that you were probably not up to executing them yet, and so you sort them away in your head, and you finally got to the day where you said to yourself, I think I'm clever enough to pull this one off. And then you suggested it to somebody, and you had networks within the business because you met people and they'd seen your work and they trusted you, and they said, yeah, that sounds a good idea, and you get to go with it. We seem to have come to an age where people are just saying, oh, I'm working on my show, and they want to skip the process whereby they do the due diligence that would actually enable them to pull that show off. Now, I haven't seen enough ideas. There will be ideas that come along that are so spectacular. The person who doesn't have experience, you as an experienced person, to put your skills into helping them execute that, because it is special and spectacular and it does need to be made. But those are few and far between. And so mostly you have a lot of people out there without the craft skills to actually make their idea work, and their idea is not special enough probably to survive insufficient craft skills, and they sort of sit around wondering why the show's not being picked up. So I would say to people, get in there and get any job in the television business to learn the skills that would enable you then as a writer to do a TV show.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, this stuff is very, very difficult to do. It's challenging. And I know people watch and just say, oh, they should have done this, they should have done that. We dedicate our lives to making a TV, and there's countless hours go into each script. And you have to have a lot of experience to be able to collaborate with people to what are you going to do when, if you're inexperienced and an actor says, I don't buy the scene? You have to know that something about actors. You have to know how to work with them. You have to have confidence in your writing that you can work together to find something. That's just one example, and you have 1,000 of those every day. So it is about finding an apprenticeship and dedicating your life to your craft, especially if you want to be a TV writer. Writing is a lifelong dedication, and it's not just, oh, I've got a great idea, I should make a hit TV show and make $1 billion off it. That just doesn't. That may happen, but I don't know who it's happened to. People who are making TV or they're very sleep deprived.
I was just saying before that, I was at this thing on the weekend, and I said to somebody at the seminar, how to lose your life, create a TV show. It really is. You sacrifice your life to it. I mean, Rafters, for example, my show that is very successful here, it's a very gentle slideshow. For a lot of people, it looks like a flummery. There are people who really don't like it because it does seem insubstantial. But the reason that show works, because although when you turn it on, everything within it looks incredibly as it should be and just so, the work that goes into making this piece that is very insubstantial, substantial, and runs 6 seasons as a top rated, is massive and doesn't, not one piece of the work shows. That's why the show is just so, because you put all the thing in. So I think you're right. People do stand outside there. They look at it and they go, well, I could do that. It would be really easy. Doing it a lot harder.
Yeah.
Is there something, for the most of us, the comic book fans, the guys that are watching, the guys and girls that are watching The Walking Dead, we have no TV writing experience. For you, and you mentioned you do watch the show, I believe.
Yeah.
So is there something with your more trained eye that you want to ask Glenn, or is there something specific about the show that you really like that they do on it that perhaps we don't really pick up on?
We talked about it out there in the green room before. For me, from a technical point of view, as a writer, I admire most the way this. When you create a show, you certainly hear, but even then you've got budgetary restrictions. You have to create it so that the storytelling keeps going in a way that allows you to contain the concept. The concept of Walking Dead could be this sort of incredibly dramatic thing that would become extraordinarily expensive to shoot because it's going here, there, and everywhere. And what I've admired most in the show is the way it's been structured in a way to contain the storytelling in certain set locations and yet still keep it exciting. We talked about the controversial farm episodes where a lot of people found those dull, but to me those were some of the more interesting episodes of the show because it allowed you to bond with the characters. All the ripping out the throats in the world means nothing if you don't care that the throats are being ripped out. So I've admired the show enormously from the craft that's gone into taking what could be a sprawling and very difficult concept to pull off into one that's contained and manageable.
Mm. And interestingly, that's something that isn't just on the TV show, but it's within the book. I mean, Robert Kirkman, correct? Mm-hmm. He could have, the world is your oyster when you're writing comics, mm-hmm. but he kept a portion of it on the farm. He then moved it to their compound. He then not up to past the compound, is that him sort of slightly with a business mind thinking, well, I got to keep this in case it goes into a TV series, one sets a scene for any story?
I think he's developing different arcs, and he centered on the main character of Rick. Mm-hmm. So I think he's thinking, okay, well, what would happen now? Where would Rick go? So say, for example, on the farm, in the comic book, it was only a few issues. We developed it into an entire season, and what I was saying was, in the green room, that we thought you know, they had gotten away from the danger and they were safe on this farm. In our minds, we realized that the zombies were coming. It was like a tsunami coming out of the city and it would overtake them. Sometimes I guess people, you know, were frustrated by the fact that they were seemingly safe. So this year in the prison, we not only made sure that the prison was always dangerous every week, but also look at the blood that our group has spilled. And then if you have the governor coming to take that prison, they're not going to give it up easily. You know, so right now they're having debates. Should we leave the prison or not? Well, no, I mean, people have died there. It's, you know, they're not going to quickly abandon it. So it is something that we pay a lot of attention to. And I think one of the reasons why the show feels real is because we spend a lot of time on those sets and the props and making sure everything feels real and has heft and gravity so that the actors really, you know, are working up a sweat. They are really running and giving their all. And I think you feel that when you watch the show. The show feels real.
Yeah. Can I ask one question which intrigued me about the end of the first half of this third season? It's pretty clear that the town becomes their metaphor for America. Am I reading into it to assume that the aquariums with the heads in it is actually almost a metaphor for TV itself?
You know what? I would say yes, because, I mean, in one way, he's in the comic book, it is his entertainment. Mm-hmm. And the line is, you know, 57 channels and nothing on. So that's a direct reference to that. That's from the comic book. Working with the actor, we also wanted to add a layer in which he was making himself look at the horror to sort of inoculate himself, if you will, right, to this brutality, because he, that character, the governor, what we've added in the show, is he sees himself on the world stage, and he thinks about when humanity looks back 1,000 years from now at these dark, at this dark age, mm-hmm, he kept a light on. Right. He was the savior, right, you know, he was Charlemagne, if you will, yeah, or a new Caesar or something. That's how much of an egotist he is. So in a way, you know, doing that is kind of preparing himself for the horrors that he thinks he'll have to deal with.
Okay. You're both writers and creators of shows. Yeah. Just briefly, what's the adaptation process compared to the creation process? You've got a source material in the comic books, A Place to Call Home. Let's maybe work off how you created A Place to Call Home.
Yeah, well, no, I've never adapted simply because we're all different in how we create, and I think I'd be a terrible adapter.
Right.
I think I'd probably stop over. I've said too much of me, just let's stop over the original material. Yeah. I don't know. I just have the stuff that comes out of me, and with Place to Call Home, I just had a vision of a woman on a ship. I didn't know where she was coming from, where she was going to, and I started asking myself questions about it. And it turned into this extraordinarily elaborate historical melodrama set in 1953. I don't know. It's just, I don't know where they come from. There is a moment I know when they come to me. One of my shows, Always Green, which was very successful, that came on the 39th tumble turn of the 50-lap swim. I remember a bit of it. I remember catching it coming 39, and this idea came into my head. So I don't know. There is a strange conduit to this other world, and it comes to me, and I channel it. So that's all I can really say. Then I do a hell of a lot of hard work and get the right people in. But, adaptation I would avoid, just because I think to adapt, you have to have a different mind to me.
Yeah, I haven't done a straight adaptation. You know, I did adapt the movie Crash to a TV series, but that was very, very different for fresh characters, fresh storylines. And with this, we deviate from the book. We sort of take what we want out of the comic book. You know, it's a bit of a treasure trove, and then you put your own spin on it. We've kept characters alive. We've killed characters. We've done things very differently. I think that it plays with the audience in a way. Sometimes it can be frustrating for the audience. Why don't they just do what's in the book? But if we did that, you know, they would know what's going to happen. And I think the thing about the book is the spirit of the book is that it's unpredictable, that it's shocking. So it's the book itself dictates we can't do a straight adaptation. So our adaptation is to the spirit of that, where it's unpredictable, it's shocking, it's exciting, and it's in fresh territory every episode. So I think if you can get the spirit right, that's what
people want. That's my belief.
Okay.
I think it's very important as a writer to sort of, I don't know if you, how you feel about it, but you recognize your strengths and your weaknesses, and you really work to hone and develop your strengths. And if you see weaknesses, you either improve them or you leave them behind you. And there's this funny thing, you know, you accept in novels that there might be someone, Rushdie or Jackie Collins, and they're very, very different. In television, there's this thing called a television writer, and people tend not to necessarily, in their head, view them as very, very separate entities. But I think there are very different types of television writers, you know what I mean, that do separate out. But have you found that?
Well, that's a fantastic point. If can I jump on that? Okay, I think what happens is, if you think about what we do, it's art. We write. And yet you are writing for a business. It goes into production where you are making episode after episode, whether it's 4 or 6 or 8 or 13 or 48, whatever, it's in production. So there's a corporate sense to it. And that structure wants writers to be clerks, to hit the desk at 9 o'clock in the morning, write until 5 p.m. and churn out something that, you know, just needs some approval. And then it goes. It's a messy business. It's a creativity. Might just hit you on the 39th lap before you have that great idea. I have to drive around and think about ideas. I wish I could, you know, write from 9 to 5, but I'm not a legal clerk. I'm a writer, and so I have a very different style from, I'm sure, you and from other writers, and yet it's all trying. The system tries to get those writers into that box. Because you have to produce a show, you know, and that manufacturing model, it requires one part of the brain of the showrunner, and then the artistry requires the other part of the brain, and somehow your brain explodes when you're running a show.
All right, well, we're nearly out of time, but we're going to do some quick fire rounds with Kathy, if you don't mind, Kathy. Brief answers, rather.
Sure.
Kathy?
So as quickly as I can, how important is social media or fan interaction for you in the development of a show or in a story or character arc?
None. I enjoy interacting with the fans, but no,
they won't.
They shouldn't. They should.
No, they should. They should watch and enjoy.
Yeah. Kathy,
can you actually really teach writing anyway, or is it more of a natural gift?
You teach craft skills, you can't teach somebody to write. You can teach them to write better, you can't teach them to write.
Agreed. You can maybe give tips on tackling this or that, certain craft, but you either can tell a story or you can't.
Kathy?
Why are some zombies smarter than others?
Oh, that's interesting. It's not necessarily that they're smarter, it's that there are a lot of different zombie rules, and within the world of The Walking Dead, sometimes there is not agreement as to what actually can a zombie do. So, for example, Frank Darabont believed that zombies could use rocks to smash windows, okay? And that was in some of the Romero films. Nicotero, who does the prosthetic makeup, does not believe that. Okay, so I believe if a zombie is near a window, they would break the window and come through the window. Scott Gimple, who is the showrunner for season 4, does not believe that. So it's what you're seeing is creative differences between the people making the show.
Right. Kathy?
Does every show have a shelf life, no matter how fresh the writing stays?
It depends on the concept, and there's nothing worse than a show that stays too long at the fair. It just becomes a tarted up old horse standing on the corner. So yes, it does have a shelf life, and sadly, unfortunately, some very good shows have stayed too long at the fair and been sad shadows of their former self.
I'd agree.
Yes, okay. Kathy, got any more?
I've got a very meta question. Do you think that the desire for flashbacks is a reflection of our information overloaded age where you know everything about everyone?
This is a question for me, because I get asked a lot about flashbacks. I do think that particularly a genre audience wants a complete picture of the entire world. I have stated in the past that I believe flashbacks slow up the narrative drive and break the tension in a horror show. That being said,
we have a great flashback coming up that I wrote coming up in an episode. So it has to be used properly. But we had a good flashback where Carl, you know, and Lori, and right in their last scene. So, you know, but I'm not a fan of them. I haven't done them well in the past, so I'm very selective.
We have very complex backstories for all our characters in Place to Call Home, and they have to be revealed, drip by drip revealed as the show goes on. And there are times when it's revealed by an aria, by the actor, and there are times, and that works, and there are other times where to not see it, I think the audience would really, really feel deprived. So I've used both. I think to use them just as some sort of device to keep a vision interesting, it's pretty naff, but if they're integrated properly into the narrative, then I think they can just break up the chats about backstory.
Yeah, and you don't want to use them simply for exposition, and I think sometimes people want that exposition, but that may not be tied into the story you're telling this week.
Okay. Kathy, maybe one last one?
A final question. What's the one piece of advice you'd give a writer starting out?
Learn your craft. Be clever and be inspired, and don't leave the truth of yourself behind. Inform the truth of yourself with craft skills.
I would say write what you love. You know, do not write what you think is going to sell. Do not write something that you think people are going to want to read. Stay true to yourself, and just write something that, if that's the last script you ever write or the last story or novel, that you could be proud of it. Just write what you love.
Tina Fey has certainly done that with 30 Rock, hasn't she? Okay, well, one last question for me, if I may. Your favorite show at the moment? Well, both your favorite shows at the moment?
Right now, I love Breaking Bad.
Okay.
Yeah, I just think Vince is fantastic. I love that show.
Fantastic French cop show called Spar Engrenage. There are four seasons just being made. If you don't know, go and get the box set. It's fantastic.
There you go. Fantastic. Well, Bevan, Glenn, thanks very much for joining us. Join us again next week on Tuesdays, 3 o'clock for our Google Hangout.
That's all the time we have for this week's Mumbrella Cast. Tune in again next time.